Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. You are a new fan about to watch your very first Formula One race. You are probably wondering, what should I expect? What are some of the rules? What is the grid? How do they set it? We are here today to walk you through the basics of watching a Formula One race. By the end of this episode, you'll know exactly what to look for so you can fully enjoy your first Grand Prix. And if your first question is, what F1 is, Formula One is the pinnacle of motorsport, a global racing series where the fastest, most high-tech open-wheel cars compete on tracks around the world. Imagine a mix of speed, strategy, and cutting-edge engineering, with teams and drivers battling for victory in races that last about 1.5 to 2 hours.
Each race, called a Grand Prix, takes place on circuits ranging from tight city streets, like Monaco, to purpose-built racetracks, like Silverstone. The goal? Finish first by balancing pure speed, tire management, pit stop strategy, and even weather condition. It's more than just fast cars. F1 is a blend of athleticism, engineering, and intense rivalry. The drivers are some of the most skilled in the world, handling cars that can reach over 220 miles per hour while pulling extreme G-forces in corners. Teams spend hundreds of millions of dollars, pounds, euros, your choice for denomination, designing and refining their cars, trying to find even the smallest advantage.
Think of it as the Olympics of car racing, where every detail from aerodynamics to fuel strategy can make the difference between winning and losing.
The governing body of F1 is FIA, which stands for the Fédération Internationale de l'Automobile, setting regulations for safety, competition, and technology.
To break down Formula One itself, the word formula refers to the rules all teams must follow when designing their cars. The one denotes the highest level of racing under these regulations.
Now, let's turn to the basics of F1 race. A Grand Prix consists of multiple sessions over a weekend, practice, qualifying, and the race. 20 drivers compete, representing 10 teams, each team with two cars. The race is determined by a set number of laps, which varies depending on the track length. Drivers earn points based on their finishing position, contributing to both the drivers' and constructors' championships. The constructors' championship is the one awarded to the car, i.e., the constructor. Strategy plays a key role, including tire choices, pit stops, and managing fuel and car performance.
So now let's get into understanding the grid itself and qualifying, which is how the grid is set for a Grand Prix. On Friday, we have our first practice session, also known as Free Practice 1 or FP1. This is the first chance for drivers to familiarize themselves with the track and test car setups. This is followed by Free Practice 2 or FP2. This is a longer session focusing on qualifying simulations and fine-tuning strategy. This is considered a precursor to how cars will perform in qualifying.
And Saturday, there is the final practice session called FP3 or Free Practice 3. And this session is used to set setups and gather data for the race day. This is the last time that a setup of the car can be changed. The next session, also on Saturday, is qualifying. It's a three-part session that determines the starting grid of the race. The first part is called Q1, where all 20 drivers compete, with the slowest 5 are eliminated. And the order they're eliminated in is the order they will start the race the next day. The next part of the qualifying session is Q2, where the remaining 15 drivers compete, with the slowest 5 eliminated. The final session of qualifying is Q3, where the top 10 drivers battle for pole position. The fastest driver in Q3 starts on pole position at the front of the grid. Six times during the year, we have sprint weekend, which is the same as the regular race weekend, except for a couple of sessions that are different. FP2 becomes sprint qualifying session with the same setup as the main qualifying session, but only used for the sprint race. FP3 becomes the sprint race. A shortened preview of what will happen in the main race. It's usually 20 laps, but it depends on the length of individual tracks with no tire change requirement.
Once cars set a qualifying time, major setup changes like suspension and aerodynamics are not allowed unless under special circumstances. This ensures teams don't drastically alter their cars between qualifying and the race. Teams can only make minor changes like front wing angle or tire swaps under parc fermé rules. Parc fermé is a secure area where cars are held and inspected under strict regulations before and after certain sessions to prevent illegal modification. This is considered a quote-unquote lockdown zone where cars are frozen in a legal state to maintain fairness. Now we get to Sunday, the actual Grand Prix. This is the main event. Typically last 1.5 to 2 hours. Drivers compete over a number of laps or time limit to finish first. The number of laps are determined by the size of the track. Longer tracks mean fewer laps. When watching an F1 race on TV, viewers are presented with a combination of dynamic visuals, data overlays, and commentary that really bring the excitement of the race to life. Each driver has to change tires to a different compound at least once in a race. When to change tires and how frequently is up to the team to determine, and that also forms part of their race strategy. Points are awarded to the top 10 finishers, top 8 in the sprint. The best phrase is lights out and away we go. Once drivers have completed the formation lap, you will see all 5 lights are illuminated. There's a brief random delay. It's usually about 2 to 3 seconds before all the red lights go out simultaneously. Lights out marks the official start of the race and drivers immediately accelerate off the grid.
Now we're going to get into what to watch out for while watching the Grand Prix. Of course, there's on-track action. This is what everyone is here for. If you're watching pre-race coverage on ESPN in US or any streaming platform that carries Sky Sport, it is well worth tuning in about 30 minutes prior to the race to watch Martin Brundle interview the grid. There's also driver's point of view with cameras mounted on cars that provide a thrilling first-person view. You'll typically see the car's speed, gear, and revolutions per minute. There's also chase shot, which capture overtakes, crashes, and pit stops. Finally, there are helicopter views, aerial shots that give a broader perspective showing the full track layout and car position. And especially on the street track, those shots are amazing. You also see a lot of data and graphics. The main one will have driver positions, a leaderboard showing driver names, only the first 3 letters, driver's car number, positions and time gaps relative to the leader or the car ahead. There's also a lap counter, which indicates the current lap and total laps in the race. There's also sector time, which highlights which drivers are setting the fastest times in specific track sectors. When you see purple, that means fastest overall. Even when you see green, that means it's a personal best. With regards to tires, you will see the tire types, which include soft, the quickest, medium, hard, intermediate, and wet, and laps since their last change. As the drivers do more laps on a specific tire type, that tire becomes slower and slower.
Throughout the Grand Prix itself, there is a lot of commentary and insights that you will also absorb. The analysts explain the strategies, technical details, and race developments. This will include pit stop coverage, key moments and replays, virtual safety car and safety car information if either are deployed, a personal favorite for enjoying the race are the team radios. These are snippets of the driver team communication, which provide insight into the race strategy and driver emotions. And speaking of driver emotions, Ina, FIA has something to say about these for the upcoming season, don't they?
There's been some discussion about not allowing the broadcast of radios to the public. I'm assuming that doesn't mean they wouldn't allow radio contact between the teams and the drivers. As a fan, that will be a huge loss because listening to the driver communications is part of the fun. Because not only do you actually see how the communication is working, you also see some interesting coded messages that are sometimes fun and sometimes very frustrating to decipher. You also see some messages that are meant for other teams to react to. So especially in terms of when to come in and change tires with a very catchy phrase of box, box. Sometimes you hear that discussion thinking, oh, you know, this team is trying to get the driver to come in on the next lap, but it's actually all for show and is just presenting the other team that this driver is competing with the opportunity to use that information to try to do something that would make that team lose position and get the driver who's sending the false message.
It's all about strategy.
Exactly. So I think that if we FIA takes that opportunity to hear these messages from the fans, it'll just make the race a lot less entertaining.
I agree. And what they're worried about for you new fans is swear words and cursing. The FIA is really putting a ban because drivers are fined for cursing. However, when team radios are presented, they're already on a delay. They're beeped out. It's really irrelevant, in my opinion.
Once the race is complete, you will see the finish line celebration. And with the first across the line, hopefully, it's one of our favorite drivers in 2025. You'll experience the team reactions and the victory lap, which are always full of emotion, excitement. The top three finishers, after they park in the designated 1, 2, 3 slot, they usually come up to the barriers to be congratulated by their teams. And each driver celebrates differently. For instance, one driver, he almost fell off the car. So that was fun when he was trying to celebrate by jumping on the car. Then another driver who won, and that was his first win in F1, did a very athletic jump and dive into the members of his team who were there to celebrate, which was very impressive. And then we actually see a driver, not right at the finish line, but close enough to actually jump into the harbor in the most athletic jump you could imagine. So it goes the gamut and is always worth watching. After the weigh-in, they get interviewed by a celebrated pundit, a commentator, and or a former Formula One driver. And they usually get interviewed in the reverse order of finishing. Afterwards, the drivers go into the cool-down room. Unfortunately, only a minute and a half is shown where you can hear their unfiltered views, observe the camaraderie, or, much more entertainingly, the tensions. There are very famous cool down room interactions that have become so famous that usually a word or two conveys what they reference. For example, one such reference is Multi-21, which refers to the interaction between Sebastian Vettel, who at the time was a Red Bull number one driver, and Mark Webber, who was very famously Red Bull number two driver. Vettel was ordered by the team to let Webber through. So 2-1 refers to the position they had to finish, as in Mark Webber as number two should finish before number one, Sebastian Vettel. But Sebastian Vettel ignored the order. This created an incredibly tense cool-down moment where Webber repeatedly told Vettel, Multi-21, Seb, Multi-21. The other example is in 2016, where teammates and former best friends Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton were fighting it out for the championship, resulting in a collision on the track. At one of the races, Lewis finished first, and when he threw the cap to Nico to wear, Nico threw it back very passive-aggressively. After the cool-down room, you'll see race analysis, recap of key moments, strategies, and standings impact from a driver and a constructor perspective. After the race, the cars go into Parc Fermé so officials can inspect them to ensure they comply with regulation with regards to weight, fuel, dimensions. In 2023, we saw Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc stripped of their P2 and P3 podiums in the United States Grand Prix because the stewards found their skid block thickness was below the minimum threshold. George Russell was disqualified in the 2024 Belgian Grand Prix when post-race checks found his car to be underweight, and it was underweight by a tiny margin.
Now, the fun part is the podium ceremony. This is where the drivers come out from third to first as they step onto the podium. They are awarded trophies or medals, and then the national anthems are played. The national anthem representing the driver's nationality is played first. The national anthem representing where the constructor team is based is played second. However, if the national anthem of the driver coincides with the national anthem of the constructor team, only one anthem is played. When Lando Norris wins a Grand Prix or McLaren, there's only one anthem that is played. The winning driver usually brings a member of the team who represents the constructor of the car that finished first. This could be the winning driver's race engineer, team principal, car designer, head of strategy, etc. They also receive a trophy. After the anthems, the drivers pick up the champagne bottles and spray each other, or the number two and three drivers spray the winning drivers. Some of the bottles have Ferrari on them. That does not mean that they are only available when a Ferrari driver wins. Countries that have strict alcohol policies like Abu Dhabi, the champagne bottles do not have champagne, but sparkling water. You know, how fun would it be to have a champagne shower? Personally, I would rather drink a glass or two instead, but
I think I would rather not be number one, two, or three to avoid the champagne shower. It's funny how some really avoid being sprayed. But in terms of celebration, although unfortunately I didn't get a chance to ever watch this live, Daniel Ricciardo, who is a driver who's no longer on the grid, used to drink champagne out of his shoe.
Oh, the shoey.
The shoey. And he would actually make whoever he brought with him, representing the constructor, drink it as well. That seems even more disgusting than the champagne shower.
That's not even a question. A shoey is definitely more disgusting than a champagne shower, no doubt. In case you're wondering where the podiums are, typically they are adjacent to the track, but they can be in a different place. The Las Vegas Grand Prix, the podium is nowhere near the track, and the drivers have to pack into a car to get there, which makes it extremely awkward. At Monza, the podium is constructed over the track, and spectators are allowed to rush the track afterwards, which creates an unbelievable atmosphere, especially when a Ferrari driver wins.
And I'm sure we'll see it in 2025. After the podium presentation, there's a post-race press conference. This is usually 20 to 30 minutes long with the top three drivers, which unfortunately I think is a mistake, but there used to be more drivers that were participating in the post-race press conference and it was a lot more entertaining. There's usually very interesting and memeable content that is often created from these conferences and they're posted by F1 on YouTube a couple of days after the fact. The new rules now require that drivers have to watch the language at those press conferences. So it will be interesting to see how forthcoming these drivers continue to be. At one point last year, Max Verstappen was given community service for swearing. So in retaliation, he refused to speak at those press conferences and actually held his own press conference outside.
Now that we've walked you through the race weekend, the race itself, how do you actually get to enjoy watching an F1 race? So there's a number of different ways. You can watch live on TV with streaming services. Obviously in the US, networks like ESPN, Sky Sports F1, and TSN in Canada that will broadcast the races live. You can also subscribe to F1 TV Pro. This is the official F1 streaming services. You are able to watch live races, onboard cameras, team radios, and real-time data. There are other platforms like Hulu, YouTube TV that will also offer coverage. And then, of course, an at a racetrack, which I can only imagine how incredible an in-person experience would be to actually attend a Grand Prix, to actually get to hear the engines and feel the buzz in the atmosphere firsthand. That would just be incredible. If you are able to go to a race, there's general admission, grandstand tickets, different VIP packages.
You can also follow social media and live commentary. For example, X, former Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok all have teams, drivers, and F1 post real-time updates, highlight, and behind-the-scenes content. There's also live blogs from websites like F1.com, BBC Sport, or The Race, which provide minute-by-minute text coverage. Of course, one of my favorite ways to engage is to listen to podcasts and enjoy a YouTube channel. Some creators do live commentary or post-race analysis, perfect for catching up if you miss it. A favorite podcast of ours is called P1 with Matt and Tommy, and they also live stream on Twitch during the race. If you cannot watch the races live, F1 uploads the highlights on YouTube the same day. There are full replays and extended highlights that are available on F1 TV, Sky Sport, or ESPN, which depend on your subscription. And no matter how you watch it, F1 is thrilling, and each method offers a unique experience.
F1 is not just a sport, it is a lifestyle and is the ultimate test of life. Being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for the gap that exists, you are no longer a racing driver because we are competing to win, from Ayrton Senna. If you are like Ina and myself, you will be hooked and become all consumed with your driver, your team, and how they're competing on the grid. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.